You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Marian Banshees. Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the ATypeI conference in Dublin, Ireland. It's September 2010, and our guest is Marian Banshees. Welcome.
Hi.
The first question is, are you religious?
Absolutely not. I'm a diehard atheist. I'm verging on a militant atheist. I'm not quite that far, but I'm, yes.
And what's the reason?
Why is that?
Well, because there is no God.
No, but does it have to do with your family or?
No, I remember in my distant past having some vague religious, semi-religious beginning. My mum denies it, but I do remember going to Sunday school. My mum was agnostic. She wasn't willing to go as far as atheist. But I probably quite literally stopped believing in God the day I stopped believing in Santa Claus. It sort of, you know, no Santa Claus, no Easter Bunny, no God. So that was about the age of six. But in the past few years, just because of the rise in you know, fundamentalist religion and it was particularly what's happening in the United States and to some extent Canada, I've become much more conscious and more outspoken about being an atheist.
And would you say you were religious with your work?
Oh, you mean committed?
Yeah.
I'm certainly
committed. That's the only thing there, that is your religion. Your work is your religion.
I would hesitate to call it a religion in that sense because religion to me necessarily seems to imply worship or something. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I wouldn't say I worship my work. I would say it's a devotion. My work is a devotion. It's just part of who I am and what I do. I work because I enjoy it.
And do you have rituals?
No.
So would you say you would start every day in a very different way in that sense?
Well, I mean, I wake up at different times of the day. I suppose if there's a ritual, checking my email in the morning. That might count as one of them. But beyond that, it really depends on what kind of day it is, if it's a sunny day or a rainy day, or if it's, if I have an impending deadline or not, the mood I'm in, what ideas I wake up with in the morning. It really, really varies. And I work most of the time, unless I don't feel like working, in which case I don't. But beyond that, my days have no particular structure. I can, and again, unless I'm working on some kind of deadline that is imminent, I can break my day at any point to do something that I feel like doing, or if somebody drops by or phones me, I can stop and deal with that or do that.
What sparked your interest in typography?
You know, I don't know that it was ever a spark. It was something that I fell into originally. I fell into a job as a book typesetter, and working with type and working in a very type-oriented environment for 10 years, I became knowledgeable about it, and I think that when you become knowledgeable about something, you take pride in that knowledge, and it usually develops into actual interest as opposed to just knowledge, and that's sort of how it came about for me. I can't ever really say there was a moment when I said, "Oh my God, I love typography."
There's not just one memory that sort of pinpoints the moment that you sort of realize, "Wow, that is type and that is interesting."
There's no moment like that.
Okay. Your illustration must have preceded that when you worked at the typesetting.
Well, I've always been, you know, a wannabe artist. I've always painted and drawn and
since
done things like that since I was young. I actually, a while back, I discovered some drawings that I'd done as a kid, you know, just like really sort of not real developed drawings, but some more like doodly kind of drawings. And I was interested to discover that there were a lot of letter forms and alphabets in there. Now, I don't know if that is a significant discovery or whether all children do that.
But how old were you when you made these drawings?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 8 or something like that. Yeah. But, I mean, I do think children maybe do a lot of, you know, when they discover
the letter. Mine do, but they see me drawing letters all the time.
Yeah.
So that's like they're just copying my, well, that's my perception of it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Well, my these drawings, I mean, when I discovered them, I thought, wow, you know, that is really interesting because I have no memory of it. I have no memory of having any early interest in letter forms at all. But there must have been something there at some point. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't until, I mean, I actually, as a, you know, as an artist, as somebody who drew, I went to art school for 1 year. And I actually remember having, we had these lectures, I think we had them twice a week from visiting artists and things. And surprisingly, we had 3 typographers come in that year.
In the first year already?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I wish I knew who they were now, but... And they gave us these lectures on type. And what I remember about them was that they were the most boring lectures imaginable. And it's really interesting because I don't remember any of the other lectures that we saw. None. But I remember those 3. And I remember, you know, like seeing the different A's up on the screen and sitting there as a student going, oh my God, I can't see the difference. I don't care. Why are they doing this to us? But it was only a couple years later that I fell into the job in typesetting, and that was... Yeah.
Why did you decide to leave then?
Which?
Art school.
Oh, I just...
It wasn't the typography classes.
No, it wasn't the typography classes. I just... They were very strongly encouraging us to specialize going into our second year and to pick something and go into that, either printmaking or painting. And I wasn't ready to specialize. I didn't feel like it, and I... didn't really think that they'd given us enough of a grounding in order to be able to make that decision, so I dropped out.
But do you think it is important to that 4 years is important if you want to become a designer?
Yes. I never had an actual training in design, mm-hmm. and when I left my job as a book typesetter, I started a design firm with a friend, and it was a really stupid idea. It was very, very difficult. I didn't have the faintest idea what I was doing. I, you know, it's one of the things that I regret. I do, if I could go back and do it again, I think I would like to have a proper education in design. Now, whether such an education would have been available to me at that time in that place is debatable, but it is one of the things I wish I had, is a proper design education.
No, because, I mean, I know you never know how things would be different, but you are as accomplished as somebody that has, and then I wonder,
that's
an education, I don't know that.
Oh, yes.
Then I wonder if that is, I don't know if that is always necessary, I don't know.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of really great designers and you know, typographers who are self-taught. I don't know. I mean, it's possible that if I had had that education that I now regret, I would not have developed as I have. I don't know. It's just a knowledge gap that I feel, mm-hmm. and which I felt particularly when I started teaching typography, which I did, I don't know, about 5 or 6 years ago, I think it was. And I was thrown into... teaching type that, you know, somebody called me up and offered me a course to teach, and they had no course outline, they had nothing. I built it from scratch, and I had 2 weeks to do it. And I had to do serious cramming in order, because I knew a lot about using type, and I knew, you know, I knew a lot about type sort of in the present, but I didn't know anything about the history of it. So I had to learn all that as I taught it. So it was a really intense first course that I taught, because I was, you know, constantly only 1 week ahead of the course, where I would be, you know, like reading and you know, finding things out and making a lot of connections that I never knew I knew, but I somehow had picked them up along the way. So I'd learn about, you know, the history of different type designers, and it would click, like, oh yeah. That's, you know, now I understand how that fits together with what I already know. But it was a weird sort of way of putting it together.
Were the students aware of the fact that you were like only like a week ahead of the knowledge?
No.
They were not?
Students never are.
All right.
You can tell students anything, they'll believe you.
They'll listen to this now.
Well, no, it's true. I have a friend who's a neuroscientist, and she teaches at a veterinary college, and she says that that was one of the things that she discovered that really amazed and frightened her, was that she could tell them anything, and they would just believe her or write it down. They will. Yeah. I mean, you can. They don't know that you don't know.
That can be quite scary. No, I'm more thinking like it could be like a really nice experience if you have that we feeling in the gathering of the knowledge and the studying and finding things out and making the connections. If you have like a sort of a joint thing, then it could be really nice as a student.
Except that I had so much more knowledge on the, like, I had this body of knowledge and I was making these connections because of the knowledge that I already had, whereas they were coming to it from nothing. So for them, it was all, you know, it was necessary for me to put those things together for them. Although I always have wanted to teach a course on contemporary design where the students do the research into contemporary designers and where they come from and what their influences are and teach it to me. I think that would be a great course.
Yeah, that would be quite funny to do that.
Yeah, no, I think it would work out really well.
Is it that you first see image and then you look for content, or you write a piece and then you say, okay, now I will create an image for that?
I think it's a little of both. It depends. I mean, most of the content that I work with, certainly with the work I'm paid for, I'm given. So I'm given that content by an editor or a designer, and then I have to make the association from there. But there are some things I get ideas all the time, and I write them down, and I have this long list of ideas that I write down, and you know, I have ideas that are sitting there waiting for the right content. And there are times when, I have some ideas that I very badly want to do, and I, you know, sort of constantly thinking, well, what would be good words to associate with that, so that at some point I'll get the two together, and then I can say, oh, okay, I'm gonna make that thing now.
But do you write the idea, the concept, the idea down, and do you wait for like the words to come to you, or like, or do you really force yourself, now I'm gonna sit down and write something for this idea? Do you need to do that, or you can just put it aside and waiting for the...
I can put it aside, but I do have some ideas in particular that are sort of very urgently at my forefront, visual ideas that are very urgently at my forefront, and I really want to do them. I want to do them soon, but I haven't yet figured out what to say. And as I mentioned in my talk, finding something to say is difficult, something, you know, without being pretentious or stupid or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
And do you consider also to commission somebody else for your idea? Or do you always have to have, it has to be you that makes?
I can't imagine commissioning somebody else. I mean, I do so much writing on my own. Yeah, I can't, I mean, if commissioning someone, you know, it sort of depends. I mean, I want to do, for instance, a book on science. I want to do, you know, I've just finished this book, which is like an illuminated manuscript, and I want to do something that for science. So that, you know, might be an example that you might call commissioning, but it wouldn't be exactly. It would be either a collaboration or a reprint of something existing. But in terms of, you know, a small statement or a few words that I, you know, that I want to express in some visual way, I think that's always going to come from myself.
For example, like the chairs for Droog design, where there were other people also working, I understood, on the chairs.
Yes.
Projects like that.
That is the only time, let me just explain what that is. I'm going to say Droog because I can't say the word properly.
Just as
I can't pronounce Lucas de Groot's last name. But Droog did this project where they bought a whole bunch of remaindered items, basically liquidation stuff, and then they asked designers to work with those items to sort of claim lots of them and come up with new ways of using those or transforming them somehow. And one of the lots that I chose was 60 wooden folding chairs, just those cheap wooden folding chairs. And my idea to work with them was, it actually came from me being in LA and having my fingernails painted for the first time by a manicurist and being really intrigued by how quickly she was able to kind of make these little nail polish flowers and things like that. So my original proposal was that for 60 chairs they get 60 manicurists to each one to do a chair in this, you know, in this very quick way. Eventually they used only 5 manicurists, I think. But that's the first time ever in my entire career that I have not actually physically put my hands on the work that was mm-hmm. being made, that I acted not barely even as an art director. I did give them some direction for it, but you know, I wasn't there hovering over them. I wasn't saying, you know, can you do a bit more of this or a bit more of that. It was just I gave them an outline of basic instructions, and I was in Canada and they were in Milan doing the work without my overview. You know, that was a very unusual experience for me. And it was kind of fun. It was, you know, I was very sort of surprised and delighted by the results. But, you know, before I saw the chairs, I had no idea if it was even going to work. But that's, you know, that's not the way I usually work. Very unusual.
And you would not do that again? Or?
Well, I might do it again, but it's not something I'm comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a bit of a control freak, actually. I like to, you know, I like to do things myself.
So then it's also hard if somebody else tells you, art directs you quite heavily.
I don't like being art directed. Obviously I need to get some idea of what the client is looking for, but my best work always comes from, the more freedom I have with the art direction, the better the work is. And the more they start saying, can you make it more like this or more like that, or showing me pictures or anything, it shuts down my entire creative process. And in the worst case scenario, makes me hostile to the process and to the work.
But when you were running your studio, didn't you run into situations like that?
Oh, yes. No, that's one of the reasons I stopped being a graphic designer. For 10 years, I worked as a strategic graphic designer where I had no particular voice or will in the work at all. It was, you know, the way the vast majority of designers work is that you customize your output according to the client's needs and, in some cases, desires. I mean, that's what most design is all about, is basically being an egoless, semi-creative presence and, you know, doing what is right for the market and the client, regardless of what that might look like. Not only did I decide I don't like working that way, I wasn't able to create anything, and this may speak to my limitations as a designer, but I wasn't able to create anything that I felt was ultimately worthwhile in a grander sense of things. And plus, I just hate the client process. I hate dealing with people who, you know, like having to hold their hand through the whole process and tell them it's going to be okay, and, you know, dealing with the back and the forth and the changes and you know, and then having to see the whole thing through to print and dealing with all that stuff. I just can't stand it. And that was why I stopped being a graphic designer and started being whatever it is I am now. And my work now is, you know, quite honestly, unashamedly ego-driven. I'm very much a presence in that work. And when people come to me, if they expect me to do what's in their head, they've come to the wrong person. Because it's, you know, I mean, this sounds really arrogant, but that's not what it's about for me. It's about, you know, my work and my presence, and they're hiring me for that. You know, my best clients get it, and my worst clients don't.
But this work, it's not that it appeared over. Is this something that you were doing while you were running your studio? So you, okay.
Yeah.
Also wondered, getting back to the end of you getting out of the studio, also was the same moment you moved to the island, right?
Yes. I bought the place on the island before I left my company, and I had started renovating it, so I was living there on weekends renovating it, and then I was living in town the rest of the time. And then the renovations ended, and it was at that point that I left the company and moved full time to the island. So there was, you know, there was a bit of a, I owned the place before I moved there ultimately.
Oh, so I really wondered, like, if you actually needed such a physical removal from what you were doing, actually like moving away to such a secluded place, you really needed the actual physicality of that.
Oh, I might have. It's hard to say. What I needed ultimately was a complete disconnection from the design process. But I did, you know, it took me, it wasn't an absolutely smooth transition. And I did spend a year not really certain of what it was that I was doing, not really certain what I wanted to do or how I wanted to do it, just basically trying things and not earning any money at all.
Well, that's what I heard in your Berlin talk in 2008, was it? It's really what amazed me that you sort of stuck out for a year and then the money was gone and then you're really on that, what do you call that?
A crossroads.
The crossroads, like either go back or, and then you persevered and now look where you're in at, or now, sort of the success story.
Yeah. And I mean, and that success story is quite possibly just a piece of luck, because I was very, very close to not making it. Yeah, when I left my company, I was earning a good living and that income dropped to zero. And I didn't earn anything, and I had money from my buyout. That money ran out after a year, and I had a choice at that point, because I was getting praise. I was getting praise from people that I admired in the design industry, but it wasn't money.
Yeah.
And so I at least had some encouragement. I think that maybe if I hadn't had that praise, I would have just said, oh, this is not working, I'm going to go get a job as a designer. And I actually did apply for a couple of jobs and deliberately blew the interview at the last minute. Yeah.
How do you blow an interview? That sounds a bit rude. No.
Not shower in the morning. And then.
No. I remember one of them, I seem to remember one of them, I made some fairly clear indication that I wasn't really committed to graphic design, that there was something else I really wanted to do, or that maybe, you know, maybe this was sort of a temporary arrangement. And given that it was a like high level position in the design firm that I was applying for, I made it clear that I wasn't really committed, or, you know, sort of pseudo accidentally let it slip that, you know, that I had other interests. But I can't remember how I blew the second one. But
do you ever visit your ex studio?
No, my breakup with my business partner was not good, and she kept the studio for, I'm not really sure, you know, like another year, and then she sold it to somebody else who then ran it into the ground, and it's no longer exists. So. Yeah, but no. I had two designers working under me, and my senior designer left with me on the same day that I left, and not to work with me, but just because he didn't want to be there without me. And my junior designer left 2 months later. So after 2 months, it was a completely new staff, essentially a completely different design studio under the same name. I mean, you know, it still had my business partner and the administration staff, but the three people who had been responsible for the actual work were gone. So.
And then you started, during that year that you sort of were slowly running out of money, you started writing for the Speak Up blog?
Yes.
Why did you start doing that? Did you feel like a need to be in touch with the design world?
Well, it was a kind of a fluke. I actually discovered them, you know, before I had had my buyout, or I had had, I had had my official dissolution of my from my partnership, but I had to stay on for a year on contract with my former business partner. But I was thoroughly disgusted with graphic design. I thought I was finished with graphic design completely. And yet I discovered the website Speak Up, and I was very surprised to discover that I still had a lot of interest in graphic design, and you know, as I was reading things on there, I found that you know that I was very passionate about it, that I had a lot of opinions, a lot of ideas, and you know, I started by commenting on the site voluminously, and then eventually, and I think maybe it was by the time I had left my company completely, I was invited to be a writer, an official writer for the site. And I've always loved to write, and it just became a really, you know, really good outlet for me. And yeah, it was a big surprise that, you know, that was another sort of, you know, something that I didn't seek out, something that just kind of fell into my life and became a really, really important part of not only my current existence and my development as a writer, but also, unbeknownst to me at the time, was a really was probably responsible for about 50% of my current success, in that people were reading my writing and had heard my, you know, would remember my name, and then they'd see my work and they'd make that connection and so on and so forth. So at the time I thought I was wasting my time hanging out on this blog, but actually I was forming, you know, half of my career.
Wow. Do you sometimes wonder if you're, this sounds a bit weird, that you were also born at, could have been born at a different time? In the sense that when you have the new book and you talk about these manuscripts, that you could have been in another lifetime,
well,
also drawing the, also writing,
well,
manuscripts?
Yeah. The aesthetics, yeah, is sort of like a monk's work in medieval times,
yes,
in this secluded,
yes,
island working on these,
yes,
manuscripts.
Yeah. Yes, no, I know what you mean. You know, I suppose there's a certain affinity there. I don't really think about, I mean, you know, I sometimes marvel that I was lucky enough to be a white person born in an affluent country like Canada, an affluent, peaceable country like Canada, and, you know, how some throw of the dice might have made things different. But I don't really think too much about if I was born in another time or if I have some kind of past life or whatever. I don't think about that too much.
And do you consider your work like girly? Because that's been,
no,
referred to. You don't?
No. I know a lot of people sort of focus in on the feminine aspects of it, mm-hmm, but I see a lot of structure. I mean, I work with a lot of structure. I'm often hired by people because they want something that's sort of beautiful but masculine and not too girly. I really don't see my work as girly and would be kind of horrified. Well, I get it. I have a lot of girly fans.
Is that an expression, girly?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay.
It's like, you know, pretty, like, yeah. Yeah. And it's something that I sort of actively work against. Mm. You know, I'm interested in things that are beautiful. The sort of, I mean, the curves that I use when I use them are, you know, are very sort of strong, perfect curves. But I'm really not into curlicues that much. Mm. Although there are a couple of pieces of my earlier pieces that have used that. But particularly recently, I'll turn down work that is asking me to be girly. I'm just not interested in it.
It's also like in some pieces that are very elaborate and very detailed, there's a sense of you could lose yourself while producing these. You could lose yourself in the detailing and not see the greater structure anymore. I suppose that could be like a danger in working like that.
Yeah, but I always zoom in and zoom out. I mean, you know, you get into the detail and then you have to step back. I mean, it's like a painter. You know, they focus on one little spot and then they step back and look at the whole. And I do the same thing with my work. So as, yeah.
And is there one piece that you admire, that in the sense that you say, this is for me really the biggest achievement out of, for example, the last 5 years? Or,
well, at the moment, my book, you know, my book, I Wonder, is like my life's work at the moment. You know, who knows what's to come in the future, but when I finished that book, I literally thought, okay, I can die now.
That's your legacy.
If I'm hit by a bus tomorrow, it's okay, because the publisher has the book and it's going ahead, you know? But aside from that, the sustainability piece is my favorite piece. I think it's just really, at the risk of, you know, tooting my own horn, which I guess is what I'm here to do, is I think it's really beautiful and complex and smart. And the only thing it's not is funny. If it was funny, it would be perfect, but...
can't have everything.
Yeah, right. But the book is funny in places.
But because you actually took 15 months off to produce the book, to sort of compile mm-hmm. it, right?
Yeah. I took a few assignments during that time. One because it was just ridiculously lucrative, and a few others because they were just too interesting. Like the stuff for Droog, they were just too interesting to pass up. But by and large, I was working solely on the book for it was supposed to be a year, and then it, you know, went on to 15 months. So.
Yeah, and I'm also curious about the wallpaper project.
The laser sailboat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, it was odd because I was... the other thing that took my attention away from my book was traveling and speaking, which always takes my attention away from work because I work alone. But I was in Los Angeles to speak at the TED conference, which was a really big deal for me and required a lot of preparation, and I was really nervous and the whole thing. And right at that time, I got two requests, one from Droog and also from Wallpaper, to include something in their respective Salon de Mobile exhibits, which I just couldn't turn it down. And especially Wallpaper, you know, to do something for a sailboat, how cool is that?
Yeah.
I actually did repurpose, I mean, you know, for Droog, I did the thing with the nail polish, and then I also repurposed some of the type that I had created for my book, just, you know, created a different sentence and concept for that. And then the thing for Wallpaper actually started as a sketch for something that I had done for the book as well. So I just did not have time to really sit down and do something new. But I was very happy with the sailboat because, you know, with being a sailboat, the sort of the obvious thing to do would have been to do something that is, you know, flowy and has to do with wind and water and that kind of thing. And again, I like to create juxtaposition, and I like to work against sort of the obvious mm-hmm. thing. And so in that sense, I wanted to make a boat that looked like it might not actually even float. And so I came up with this geometric, very chunky thing. I wanted it to look kind of like it was made out of, you know, these sort of pyramidal kind of forms of concrete.
Yeah.
So that's how that came about. And they produced one. Well, they were trying to get it done in time for the exhibit, and unfortunately it wasn't done in time. But they made one, and then the plan is that there are 10 more for sale.
Would you receive one?
Well, I've been nagging them about it. I want the prototype, the mm-hmm. one that they did. At first they said, you know, they'd try and get it for me, but then, you know, they decided to do this edition of 10, and the idea is that if they sell 9 of them, I get the 10th one, or I can get a commission on the other sailboats, which actually comes to quite a bit of money. Like, I think it's £10,000. You know, 10,000. I could do a lot with £10,000. So it's like, don't want a sailboat, or don't want 10,000.
You're on an island, though. This is perfect.
I know. I really want that boat. I really want that boat. I don't know if they're going to sell 10 editions of that sailboat, though. So, I'm still I'm still kind of vaguely hoping that they might give me that prototype, but I really don't. I don't know. But I do want it.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if you tell the listeners to buy one.
That's right. Go out and buy a 10,000-pound laser sailboat. It's really great. And people, it's a head turner on the water. That's for sure.
So now what? After the book, are you continuing the way you did, or any new directions?
Yes, I am at the moment continuing the way I did. You know, taking commissions. I do a lot of editorial work. Hoping to get one of those nice big advertising commissions that allows me to sit around on my laurels for the rest of the year. I don't really, but you know. but I do sort of, I mean, I have some projects that I want to do that are outside the realm of what I'm doing now that may require me taking more time off. I do feel the need to somehow define some sort of new phase, as opposed to just kind of going back to what I was doing before. But I haven't really had the time, or, you know, haven't really been able to figure it out. Mostly once I was done the book, it was like, okay, I got to make some damn money, and so I've been doing that, and then traveling and speaking, and I need a little bit of space to kind of shake my head and say, okay, what's next? Yeah.
Last question: how would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to be remembered as somebody that was always full of surprises, and that my work mattered, and that it's influential in some way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.